This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's RSM Classic. There is no time to sleep. I know we crowned Dustin Johnson our Masters champion mere hours ago, Greg, but we do not sleep. It's RSM Classic week.
And we're staying in the South. We're staying in the Southeast. RSM Classic's always fun and exciting. You know, what I like about this one is there's a group of guys who call this place home, right? They call the Sea Island area home for them. They practice there. They play there. So it's pretty cool to see because you definitely have some local. It's a rare home game on the PGA Tour. This is one of them for some of the players.
That's Greg Ducharme, who you can find on Twitter at TheRealGFD. Not one course this week, Greg, but two. Double your fun. So let's talk about this. This is very similar to what we would get at Torrey Pines with the North and the South course. The Seaside course is the host course. So that is the Plantation course is the other course. So basically every golfer in the field, they're going to play one round at each course on Thursday and Friday, and then they're going to make the cut. And then they're going to go to the Seaside course for the final two rounds. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do. And what you also probably love about this is you get a round in this tournament with no shot link. Right. No. So
I hate that.
You do. I thought you were a fan of that. That must be somebody else. But anyway, so that is interesting. This is one of those rare weeks where you can have the most strokes gained in the field and not win the tournament because there's that one additional round. So it'll be interesting to see.
The other thing is, so this is really fun for like first round leader and showdown and stuff like that. So I'll try to do some research and tweet some stuff out on this, but one of these courses is a par 70 and one is a par 72. So when you start looking at like, who's going to be the first round leader, one of these courses is going to play easier. You know, if you're looking for showdown, like you might want to play a bunch of guys from one of these courses. So like the first couple of days, there's a couple of wrinkles that if you're paying attention, you can find some edges on.
Which one do you think is the easier one? Do you prefer in a showdown or something? Do you prefer the par 72 or the par 70?
Yeah. So I should have looked this up beforehand. I had this handy. I'm pretty sure the Plantation course is the easier one. I mean, it's a par 72 and it's short. They're both basically, they're within 55 yards of one another. So I think you get the right two extra par fives. I'm pretty sure that's the one you want to score on. So
is not really that long as it is, even as a par 70, 7,000 yards is not extremely long.
Well, the winning score, I mean, often gets into 20 under. I think the average winning score in the last 5 years is like 19.6 under par. So like, yeah, you're going to need to make a lot of birdies no matter which course you're playing.
Right. Which these are events that often you have a really jammed leaderboard coming down the stretch. I'm curious when you go with a single round thing like that, what's your strategy? Because I feel like it's such a shot in the dark when you're talking about one round. You go over four rounds, and all of a sudden you have a guy who's playing a certain way. It can come into form. It can kind of, you get a flavor for the tournament. If I was going to do a one round thing, I may do a round three showdown type deal. But round one's always the hardest one for me to predict.
Yeah, or you could do round two, because round two, you'll have seen what I would like to do is like see the guy. So say you get the guys who have shot link on Thursday, you see how they're playing, and then you know they're going to go to what in theory should be the easier course on Friday. Like those would probably be the guys that I would want to target.
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe round two gives you a little bit of data, a little bit of eye test. And you can kind of see how it plays out.
And I want to see, I'll have to go back and pull this from last year. And I always think about this when we get to two course rotation, are you better off playing the same course 3 days in a row? So there are going to be guys who make the cut and play the seaside course Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as opposed to the guys who have to sneak the Plantation course in there one round.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's a huge difference in 3 days in a row or not. I would bet the data doesn't really show that. But what I do like to see is, I would think as a player, having three afternoon rounds in a row might be advantageous. Something as far as the schedule is concerned, that may make a little bit of a difference. But I would bet the scoring averages and numbers, there's a very, very small difference.
And last thing on this. So I don't think they have to wake up as early this week, because the first two rounds, they only have to get half the field out all day. So basically everyone's playing at once. So I haven't looked at the tee times yet. I don't know if they're out yet, but like, I don't even think they have to start. You know, they usually start like 7 o'clock local as soon as the sun comes up. I don't think they have to do that this week.
That's a great point, Rick. They usually come out on Tuesday. Tomorrow we should have some tee times out. It'll be interesting to see. They had some early wake-up calls this past week.
That's for sure. Greg, would you like to win a 55-inch television?
Yes, please.
Well, you're not eligible, but everyone else listening and watching can win. We are giving away a 55-inch smart TV, and here's what you need to know if you'd like a chance to win. The contest is completely free to enter. To win, go to cbssports.com/firstcutgiveaway. That link is in the description of the episode if you're watching on YouTube, as well as in the podcast description on all podcast platforms. This contest ends November 23rd. So you have about a week or so to go, and the winner will get to watch the next Masters, only 5 months away, in crispy high definition. The player pool, 5 golfers over $10,000 on DraftKings, Greg, led by Webb Simpson at 11,200, Sung J.M. hot off his runner-up finish at the Masters, 11,000, Tommy Fleetwood, 10,700, Terrell Hatton, 10,400, and Russell Henley, who we did not get to see last week, $10,100. What are we doing at the top?
It's hard to stay away from Webb here. Yep. Webb's won. He came in second last year. He lost in a playoff to Tyler Duncan, third the year before that. It's tough to play away from Webb Simpson. He had a couple of nice rounds last week. The tournament didn't continue the way that he hoped, but Augusta National is a place that's been pretty tough on Webb Simpson. It's a big golf course. It was soft, which makes it a little bit longer. It's manageable, but it's harder. It's hard to make a lot of birdies on that golf course when it's playing long and you hit the ball the distance that he does. So I look at last week as a really just a challenging test for him. I think his game is still in plenty good form. Coming back to two golf courses that he's familiar with, I think you're going to see Webb Simpson put on quite a show. So I still like Webb Simpson. The other guy that I like is Hatton. Hatton's coming off a missed cut at the Masters.
Yeah.
That happens. It's not a golf course that sets up for everybody. It's a major championship. It's difficult. It's just simply challenging. So I'm not too worried about Hatton missing the cut last week. Before that, he had a tied third at the CJ Cup, tied 28th at Zozo, tied 7th at the Houston Open. This is a player I think is in really good form, and I'm not shying away from the missed cut last week.
You know what's interesting is you can actually like grind film this week. You could be like the all 22 NFL coordinator and be like, how did Hatton miss a cut last week? Let me go watch every single shot that he hit. Like we don't often get to grind film in this world, but we can this week.
No, well, not for now, but I have a feeling what we get to see this week is something we're going to get to see in the future on the PGA Tour. I hope for that.
Do not.
Maybe a subscription type thing. I'm serious.
Any amount of money. I'll pay any amount of money for it.
Look, last year at the Players, we were going to see every shot from every player. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's going to continue. If it's successful, which it will be, I think you're going to see that.
Zach wants to know how DraftKings works. You get 6 golfers under $50,000 in your lineup. You try to score as many fantasy points as possible. Webb Simpson, 11,200. Greg, I think we are past the point of being like, this is a Webb course. I think they're all Webb courses. I mean, he is a wet, soft Augusta National last week, still able to finish in the top 10. So impressive. Now he goes to a place where he's had so many close calls, runner-up finish last year, third place finish 2 years ago. He has another runner up in the past. I mean, he's just been knocking on the door here. Like, I'm pretty convinced Webb's going to win this thing.
I think it's a strong take. He's the favorite for a reason. He deserves to be the favorite. So I'm looking at Webb with, I don't know how you, I mean, look, there's always an avenue to fade the most expensive guy. Yeah. There's always an avenue, but this is a tough one for me. I think he's has the best course history. He proved last week that his game is in good form on a course that I think is really hard for him, as I said, and you still see that performance. So I gotta go with Webb here as well.
You know, the only golfer since the restart who has been comparable to Webb, like in terms of the strokes gain numbers, is Russell Henley. I know you're a big Henley guy. I mean, 10,100 didn't get to tee it up last week. Might have a little chip on his shoulder. I mean, he's been phenomenal. He's been piling up top tens. I'm happy to pay, like, in that 10K range, I'm happy to spend the most. I'm happy to go pay up for Webb, and I'm happy to drop down and start with Russell. I think they're both great options.
Russell has been a birdie maker, right? And his iron play has become something that is elite. So I look at Russell Henley and I'm saying, yes, please. Yes. The only thing with Henley that I'm not crazy about is that he's priced. I like Henley when I feel like I'm getting a little bit of a deal on him. Mm. And it seems like the pricing is kind of caught up. So, I mean, ninth so far this year on tour, tee to green, ninth approaching the green as well. He's hitting 75% of his greens are regulation. He's hitting 71% of his fairways. Distance may be the challenge for him. But when you hit it that accurately, and you're going to two shorter golf courses.
Yeah.
So I think it suits really well for him. Averaging 4.25 birdies per round. Henley is a great play this week.
Real quick on the other guys in this range, as much as I love Sungjae, you know, we talk about the meteoric rise in pricing sometimes. He's now $11,000. It's, I believe, the fourth most expensive he's ever been in his young career, which shocked me. I couldn't believe I could find a couple of times that he was actually more expensive than this. The thing that we haven't seen with Sungjae in the restart is consistency. You know, he has struggled to put two events together like he was doing previously. So, you know, we can take guesses later in the week of what that ownership might look like, but I'm probably not as interested in Sungjae this week as I normally am.
What do you think his price would have been if they did what they did for Masters, where they priced the week before?
Oh,
you didn't see that Masters performance. I mean, would he be a 9K guy? Where do you think he'd fall?
I think he'd be a 9K guy. I think he'd be like Harris English, Jason Day, Louis range.
Yeah, I think so. He'd have to be below Jason Day.
Yeah.
Jason Day would probably be much higher.
Oh yeah. Because we also wouldn't have seen Jason Day's missed cut.
Right. And we would have seen, we would have seen a great a T5 at Houston. So it would have been fascinating to watch, but the only reason I bring that up is it gives you an idea of what the effect of last week was. Mm-hmm. So 1 week, a record setting week, he set a record for, it was the lowest score for a debut at the Masters in history at 15 under. And
so good.
I think that skews his pricing upward. And I agree with you, Rick. I'm unfortunately, look, that's an emotional week. You just came and tied second at the Masters. And now you're going to go play the RSM. I think there's an exhale. I do.
Sungbot feels no emotion, Greg. He does not have the capacity to feel emotion.
Sometimes it seems that way. He's rock solid. And he's look, so he may prove us wrong, but I have a feeling this one's going to be a little dip in the performance.
I mean, I hope he does, right? Like, but this is a math problem. You know what I mean? It's a puzzle that we're trying to put together, and the puzzle gets much more difficult with an $11,000 Sungjae. Like, that's just the puzzle.
Yep, I agree.
$9,000 range. Matthew Fitzpatrick squeaks through to make the cut last week, 9,900. Harris English, who we didn't see, 97. Jason Day at 95. Louis Oosthuizen, 93. Shane Lowry, 92. Joaquin Niemann, who as of this moment is still in the field. We'll talk about that in a second, 91. And then Sebastian Munoz rounds out the $9,000 range, Greg. Joaquin Niemann tested positive for COVID before the Masters. Not sure what his current status is. Currently still in this field, so we will proceed as he is in this field until we know otherwise.
I'm likely staying away because of the uncertainty. So we don't really know what's going to happen with Joaquin. And I think there's some other players in this price range that are really attractive.
Okay, who are they?
Well, Harris English jumps off the page to me.
This is, yeah, baby. Let's go, you know, Harris English.
I understand the way the field was made up for this past week, but Harris English is a guy that I think could have really, I mean, he could have been a part of the story. He and Daniel Berger. And look, they didn't meet the qualification standards. So it's no one's fault. It's just Harris English turned into a player that you would think is a Masters kind of contender. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a huge fan of that. His record so far this year, he was fourth at the US Open. He missed the cut at the Shriners, but he shot five under. So there have been a lot of players great form who missed the cut there, but shot 500. Okay. You had to shoot 700 to make the cut.
And that was his only missed cut in like 11 starts is he goes, he shoots 500 and doesn't find the weekend.
Right. So it's not a sign of poor play. Cause then he comes back the next week with a 10th, tied 28th at the Zozo, which just, you know, over the weekend, it just kind of, he didn't carry any momentum into the weekend, 72-70. But I look at this guy as a player who's playing great golf, who's extremely confident. And he's one of those Sea Island guys. So I think it's a home game for him. And I'm going to have a little bit of a lean, as you'll see in some of these other picks, a lean to hometown kids.
Got it. 8 top 20 finishes in that 11 start stretch in which he only missed one cut. That one cut that he missed, he was 5 under at Shriners in a historically low cut line. And he does what I love, Greg, which is gain strokes in all 4 major categories. It is why he is so safe. It's why his floor almost in the last, you know, 6 months or whatever has been basically a top 20. It's why he's so solid everywhere. You know, I look at some of the other guys in this range, not as excited about, you know, Jason Day, I think is so hard to handicap at the moment because he's given us flashes of brilliance in Houston. He played better at the CJ Cup than his finish would indicate because he WD'd and then he misses the cut at the Masters. So like, I'm kind of flipping a coin on Jason Day at the moment. I'm not really sure what to do.
So what do you think is the most important aspect at these golf courses?
I think that I think these are birdie fests and you have to putt. I think the guy who putts it the best is going to win.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way, but it's hard to get a real handle on it. Like the guy that putts the best, it's hard to handicap that.
Right.
Jason Day can do that. But is he going to give himself the opportunities? We know the question mark there with him. We know exactly what it is. Iron play. Is he going to hit a lot of greens? Is he going to give himself a lot of birdie putts? He'll contend. If not, then he won't be anywhere to be seen. So I don't necessarily, I'm not sure where we are with that. I've seen some good, I've seen some bad, I've seen everything in between. So I don't know. I'm kind of with you on Jason Day. Munoz.
Let's talk about him.
Because I like him. I think he's a hot hand. I think he's proving that he's more than I don't believe that this is just a good streak for him. I think Sebastian Munoz is proving to himself that he's a legitimate contender and belongs out here. Now, last week he was in the mix. He had it at 9 under at one point. He shot 75 on Sunday, but Sunday at the Masters is different than Sunday at the RSM. I think everybody can agree with that. And there's just simply a different pressure. But listen to these finishes. I mean, is this a streak that's about to end? I'll ask you, Rick. But listen to this: tied 23rd at Sanderson Farms, tied 27th at Shriners. We know how hard it was to make that cut. 9th at Shadow Creek at the CJ Cup, tied 14th at Zozo, tied 19th at the Masters. This has just been so steady. And he had the week off for the Houston Open. So I don't feel like he's on too long of a stretch of play. I think this is, at his price, I think he's got to get on your team.
I love and hate Sebastian Munoz. So he has been phenomenal. Let's get real. Like from the end of last season, those results that you are referencing, I think it's very clearly the best stretch of golf he's had in his career. And I'm not sure that there's much argument there. The thing that makes it so hard, Greg, is he has one round every week where he plays himself out of the golf tournament. You know what I mean? And I know it was Sunday at Augusta, but it feels like it happens more often than that. If you look up at the end of the day and say, okay, it's a T19, that's a great finish, whatever. But he was on the first page of the leaderboard for like the first 3 rounds. So it's almost hard to stomach. I don't know. I'm definitely in on him, right? More than I am out. I think the results are great. I don't think the price has matched up yet. He's a winner on the PGA Tour. There's a lot going for him. So I definitely, I just close my eyes, put him in the lineup and see what happens.
Yeah. I think, look, I do think there's a pretty solid floor there. He has had a couple of concerning Sunday rounds, Masters last week, yeah. Zozo 72, and US Open 82. Those are pretty solid fields, right? Pretty stout golf courses. Maybe Sherwood wasn't all that difficult, but that's a 72. So the two majors are his highest Sundays. But he also shot 67 at Shriners, which was right on par with what he did for the rest of the week. He shot 69 at Shadow Creek on Sunday, moved up the leaderboard. That was one of his better rounds of the tournament. So I don't think there's a Sunday problem at this point in regular PGA Tour events. There may be a Sunday problem in majors, but we all know that's next level. That's a level up. That's a guy, you would analyze that with a Webb Simpson. Right, a guy who's at $11,000, not a guy down in the bottom of the 9K range.
Jamie Brown in the chat asks, any Masters jet lag, which I assume he doesn't mean real jet lag because it's 200 miles away. But you did mention earlier, Greg, the emotional toll of potentially playing in the Masters and if there is any hangover this week. And I just wanted to kind of talk about that as an idea, right? You know, what's too much of a hangover? What is, you know, too deep into the leaderboard? Like, is any of this a negative? You know what I mean?
See, there's a very fine line between playing well and nearly winning. Mm. So if you're a player like Sebastian Munoz, who comes in tied 19th, you may have thought on Sunday, you may have had dreams of winning going into Sunday's round, but there was definitely a doubt. You weren't thinking, okay, if I do what I should win tomorrow. I think he was 9 under, if I remember correctly. You're talking about being 7 shots back of Dustin Johnson. And you got Justin Thomas in the way, John Rahm in the way, a bunch of these other players in the mix. You're not thinking about winning. You're thinking about playing well and finishing in the top 10 or top 12, getting invited back automatically. So for Sebastian Munoz, I don't think there's much of a hangover. But there's a difference between that solid play, just kind of sneaking through with a nice finish and nearly winning. Sungjae Im probably thinks he had a chance to win at some point. He set a record. He's achieving, I mean, he comes in tied second. He achieved some things that that people dream of. And that's a different emotional toll. Going to a place, playing well, having a good week, not really contending is different than nearly winning and wondering what happened. I think last week may still be on your mind if you're Sungjae Im. If you're Sebastian Munoz, I think you chalk it up to a positive and it's confidence heading into this week. Your challenge is now Sunday. Can I handle Sunday? Sungjae, I think, is an exhale more than a hangover is how I would explain it.
Interesting. I want to get into the 8K range and below, find a little bit of value. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back. $8,000 range, Greg. I kind of like this. There's a lot to talk about in here, so I think we can take our time. Corey Connors, 8,900, all the way down to Zach Johnson and Doc Redman at a flat 8,000. There are guys with good course history. There might be some buy low candidates in here. Let's go through a couple of these. Who in here do you like the most?
Denny McCarthy jumps off the page at me. And look,
Denny McCarthy's in the $7,000 range. Hold on, wait, hang on to him for a couple minutes. We'll get to Denny.
Wait, he is?
Denny McCarthy, 7,700.
Oh, 77. I'm thinking he's 87.
See, okay. Greg likes him so much, he would have paid $8,700 for him. So you know he would have.
Okay.
77.
No, I got my 7 and 8 mix up. Okay.
I love Denny McCarthy. We're gonna spend a lot of time on him. Let's focus on the 8s.
All right. First and foremost. Now I like Corey Connors has been playing great golf.
Yeah.
So he is definitely someone you want to look at. High end of the 8K. Well, let's just jump down to Kevin Kisner for a second.
Okay.
Kevin Kisner, I think we can discuss because I know you're not a huge fan of him for this week. And I kind of am. Now, I think if you're Kevin Kisner, you're looking at a place like Augusta National, and you're from there, right? You're from right next door. And the golf course continues to get longer, and your chances of winning there continue to diminish. So I look at Augusta, and I say, this is a hard course for Kevin Kisner. And I don't expect much out of him there. But I look at what he did at the Zozo. I look at what he's done at the RSM in the past. And I think I think extremely positive of it. I mean, he was tied 14th at the Zozo. And last week didn't quite go his way. So I like him. I really do. I know he missed the cut last year, but he's had some really nice finish. He was tied 7th in 2019. I guess he didn't play in 18, and there was one other really nice finish from him.
Yeah, he's.
So he's had some really nice finishes in the past, and I think he's going back to a place that fits his game much better.
So the fact that I don't really want to play Kevin Kisner this week, I actually think is a compliment to him. So let me try to unravel this for a second.
Okay.
So he has the elite course history in this field. He's got the win in 2016. He's got three other top tens since 2015. I mean, he's been phenomenal around here. So he gets that course horse designation, and the ownership starts to climb. So I guess my argument for not playing him is I actually think so highly of Kevin Kisner's game that I think he can contend and compete at a lot of different courses. I mean, he finished third at the Rocket Mortgage. He finished third at the Wyndham. He finished fourth at the Northern Trust. He played well at Zozo. Like, as long as it's not overly long, I think that Kevin Kisner can find a hot week and contend because he hits his irons well and he can putt well. So I don't want to be a part of the Kevin Kisner week when he's 25% owned and has a similar chance of winning or contending. And then the weeks where he's like 8% owned and he can win, you know what I mean? Like, I actually think so highly of him. I don't think I have to play him this week.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but Rick, this is a one and done, right? You can play him.
That's true.
You can play him every week if you want.
That's true.
Nothing holding you back. So I want to take advantage of that great course history, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those situations where you wonder, is this the guy? Is this the slot where if I have a Webb Simpson who has a lot of ownership, do I need some uniqueness down in this area? If that's the case, I could see a fade on Kisner. But I think there's ways around that. I don't think the ownership on him alone is really going to bog you down.
Now,
if Denny McCarthy is getting a lot of ownership and you think that he's going to be really owned, then maybe I'll go away from Kisner because I need Denny in my lineup. But I'm pretty high on Kisner this week.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Let's talk about your guy, Brian Harman, 8,500. Now he's becoming my guy, right? Like, now I'm like, oh, Brian Harman, this is pretty slick.
There he is. I've turned your eye to him.
He is on an 11 event cut streak. It is the fifth longest active streak on tour, and it's the longest active streak of anyone in this field. I think Louis is also tied with him at 11 in a row, but it's not just about making cuts for him right now, Greg. He has 7 top 30 finishes in that stretch and 3 top 15s. And here's what I really like about it, because you know I like to look at the strokes gain stuff. Normally he relies heavily on the short game, but he has now gained strokes on approach in 5 consecutive events. I could only find one other time in his career that he had gained strokes in 5 straight events on approach. It feels like he's in a really good stretch right now. I like Brian Harman at 8,500.
So as you know, I watch Brian Harman.
Right? Yes, you do.
I follow.
Probably more than anybody.
Maybe I'm up there top 3 fan. But anyway, so I watch him, and I've seen some events where Sunday he doesn't quite take that stride. Right. It comes Sunday and I'm feeling pretty good. Oh, I got Brian Harman in another lineup. He's doing great. He's crushing it for me. And I get 72 on Sunday. I mean, listen to these Sunday scores. You have 73, 72, 72, 70, 73. And I'm like, ah, man.
Shoot it's something just... in the 60s, man.
Well, what does he do in Houston? 65 on Sunday.
There we go.
So maybe he's unlocked a key, feels a little bit better about Sundays, and you're going to see a better performance out of him. Because now this one kind of got him into back to a T24. So he cracks the top 25 with that finish. Right. You feel great about it. Do you feel at all like you're paying for it? I worry that he's, if he was a flat 8K, 7,900, I may be a little more in for him. I feel like for a guy that's finishing right around 25th every week, a guy that doesn't make a ton of birdies, who I love, as you know, I don't know if I'm getting at 85, if I have enough kind of like win equity. Kisner, yeah. I feel like I can win with Kevin Kisner can get me a W. I don't know if Brian Harman can right now.
Yeah, you might be paying for the safety of Brian Harman at 8,500 instead of potential
win. He is safe.
He has been. There's at least two other guys that I need to talk about. Is there anybody else? Like who else we got?
Yeah. Ian Poulter is on my mind. Okay. I want to get your thoughts on this because it's kind of a, we saw him at the US Open and he missed the cut. Again, tough course, tough setup for him. Comes to the CJ Cup at Shadow Creek, another tough setup, plays really well, tied 12th, shoots 68 on Sunday, 69 in the opening round, and 8 under for the week, tied 12th. And then Masters last week, tied 25th. He never really got it going, never really got hot, but it's really good play. That's for a guy who is 44 years of age, and has never been a really long hitter on the PGA Tour to handle. To handle the Masters and Augusta National in that way, I think is quite good. What do you think about Poulter?
He's not long and he putts well, which these are two courses that'll work just fine. It's actually even better than that. So you got the 25th at the Masters, the 12th at the CJ Cup, and then he had back-to-back top 10s on the Euro Tour. So his last four starts worldwide have been great. And
one of those was that event where it was pouring rain in the European Tour.
Yes. Yep. And so you've got the Scottish Open and you've got the BMW PGA Championship. The BMW PGA Championship is that's a stout field. Like you get legit players over there. So he's been on basically a month's worth or 6 weeks worth of good play. And this is probably one of the handful of courses I would like him on more than most. So yeah, Poulter's certainly an option down there.
Okay. Now let me take a guess at guys you have to talk about.
Okay.
Wild guess. Okay. Just really blindfolded, throwing a dart. Option one is, I'll take the layup first, Doc Redman.
That's definitely one.
Okay.
Yeah.
From the free throw line, I'm going to take Mackenzie Hughes.
Boom. You're the
two
man,
for
Greg.
Two.
Yeah, here we go. I'll make it quick. This is so easy, right? Doc Redman, friend of the pod, is one of the better ball strikers in this field. He has put himself in contention multiple times in the last couple of starts, Wyndham, Safeway, and Bermuda. He is in this awkward spot where he's like not qualifying for like your majors and your WGCs and your invitationals, but he's one of the better players in this field. And then Mackenzie Hughes. Okay, here's the thing about Mackenzie Hughes. 8 top 15 finishes in his last 16 starts, 50%. 50% of his starts going back to Honda. That was in like February, last week of February. Yeah. He has finished in the top 15 and half of them. Like he's a popper. He's like a goodish, he like pops more often than other poppers and he can contend.
If you're at a 50% clip with top 15s, you're beyond a popper. That's steady play. You're just good, right? That's the modern, on the PGA Tour, you're not going to go unless you're in this real upper echelon, choosing your schedule, all that. You're an elite of the elite. You're not playing every week and finishing in the top 15. If you are, you're not in the 8K range. You're not in the lower portion of the 8K range. So he is an above average PGA Tour player. If you can rattle off top 15s every other week, and I know it's not every other week, but you get my point.
Half the time,
you're in great shape. And that's the journey to a tour championship, not the journey to keeping your card. He's looking to get into the top 30. He's looking to get into the invitationals, to get into the majors. He's not looking to keep his card. He's next level. So I like Matt Hughes.
$7,000 range is massive as usual. It is led by CT Pan and Taylor Gooch at $7,900. And there's a bunch of guys down at the bottom, including your defending champion, Tyler Duncan, Will Gordon, who has popped here in the past. Greg, let's do the Denny talk. I know you're chomping at the bit. Let's do the Denny talk.
Yeah. So love Denny in so many ways. I know you're really into him as well, Rick.
Yeah.
So are you still seeing the same thing with the iron play, that the iron play is improving? Greens of regulation, he's up over 70%, nearly 71%. Birdie average is 4.32 per round in 2021, which I love. And I'm seeing kind of an every other streak going now. He was tied sixth at the Sanderson, 57th at Triners, although he played pretty well there, just a 72 on Sunday. You plummet down the leaderboard. Tied fourth in Bermuda, tied 38th at Vivint. Are we getting ready for another top five here?
Okay, we have been tracking the trajectory of Denny McCarthy for months, and it feels like he's on the verge. So here are the numbers. In his last 9 measured events, he has gained 11.9 strokes on approach, so plus 11.9, which on the surface you say, like a stroke in an event. That's not all that good. But when you compare that to the 9 events previous to that, he was losing nearly 24 strokes. I mean, it has been a massive change. He is still one of the best putters on the PGA Tour, and he's got good history. He finished 8th here last year. Like, we are in the same way that I feel like a Sung J.M.'s trajectory is going, a Doc Redmond's trajectory is going. Like, these guys are going to win, like, a lot. Like, it's coming. Yes.
So is Denny McCarthy going to win a lot? I don't know. But
no, yeah,
I do.
But he's going to win soon.
I think he's going to win. I do. So yeah. I feel, and when I look at 2 things, I look at these with him, not with everybody. Greens of regulation, as high as it is a great sign. Like, you first look at his statistic page, you see 186 strokes gained approach, and it's been weak for, it was not very good in 2020 either, as far as ranking. But then you hear the conversations that we have about how it's improved and how he's gaining a little bit in the more recent terms. And I like that. And I see the evidence now in greens of regulation. You're hitting 71% of your greens. That's a lot. And you're giving yourself a lot of chances for birdie, and he's capitalizing on it. With 4.3 birdies per round is a lot. And if you can sustain that in an event like this, that's going to go a long way. You need to make those birdies. And I think that number can even increase in a week like this. So yeah, I'm pretty high on Denny this week. I think the recent form, he checks the box, the course history, he checks the box. And I think the statistics, if you mine in deep enough, he checks the box as well.
The same price at $7,700 is Sam Burns, who he was either like the 36 or 54 hole leader in Houston. I feel like he's given himself a couple of cracks recently, both in Houston and Safeway. He finished 7th in both of those. He's the rare combination of kind of long and accurate off the tee. I like where his game is going too, especially when you get him in a field like this, and $7,700 feels like a pretty good place to plug him in.
Yeah. It feels like a Sam Burns kind of a field. I agree. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with the weekend performances for him, right? They've been not great of late, and it's a level that you got to jump, but what does it take to jump it? Sometimes it can send you in the wrong direction. So I would say I'm lukewarm on Sam Burns.
You know, who's here? The Todd father. Producer Jacob wanted us to talk about the Todd father, which I can, like, okay, short hitter. He can putt. He broke his toe, so we can kind of give him a pass for some of his recent performances. Finished 4th here last year. Is this, are we getting back in yet? That means no. That long pause was so telling.
Yeah, I know. I'm leaning towards no. I love the Todd father. And this is definitely the kind of golf course. These are the kind of golf courses he can have success on. And he is so gracious. He's such a good guy. He's been great, nothing but great to me. So I'm a huge fan of him. Personally, I'm a fan of his game. He's a great putter, 12th this year in putting. But I'm just, I don't know if this is the toe. I don't know if it was the pressure of Bermuda. I know Augusta's tough for him. So a couple of 73s there. It doesn't get the job done this week. But I've seen too many high scores from him this year. We have at the U.S. Open, a couple of 75s on the weekend. I know it's a U.S. Open, right? You can write that up. Well, then CJ Cup, there's a 77. And it's a toe thing. I totally get it. 75 in Bermuda, 73s at the Masters. It just doesn't feel like he's in the form he was last year. So I have to sadly say no and hope that he proved me wrong. And this is the week where he turns it all around. And it was the toe all along. That's my hope. But I can't take that risk this week.
Real quick, I just want to run through a couple because I want to get down to the 6K and talk about some of these guys. I mean, Austin Cook looks like he's rounding back into form. He won this a couple of years ago. HV3 is 7,400. I think he's going to be popular this week. That's a very low price on a guy who, I mean, he's a fan favorite. He strikes it well. Yep. Cam Davis, super raw, talented kid at 7,200 and your man Stuart Sink at 73. Those would be guys I'd be interested in. Is there anybody else?
I wouldn't be afraid of looking at Scott Piercy at 7K flat. I think his game is kind of getting back to what it used to be, and you're still seeing really low prices on him. So Scott Piercy would be a guy I would take a look at. I haven't gotten too deep into it yet, but he's a guy that I'm watching, and I don't know if he makes it into my lineups this week, but I'm definitely going to have my eye on it. And I have a feeling he's going to pop up on the, you know, first page of the leaderboard. And I'm going to say, I knew it. So I got to throw his name in there.
$6,000 range, Brendan Steele, Brian Gay, Graham McDowell, Harry Higgs, James Hahn, Matt Jones, Patrick Rogers, all are $6,900. It seems like a lot all the way down to Bo Hogue, Brandon Hagee, Camilo Villegas, Hunter Mahan sighting at the min price.
Ooh.
Best names in the 6K range, Mr. Greg.
So talk to me a little bit about Rafa Cabrera Bello, because he's a guy, maybe he's going to be really popular, right? Because he was kind of teetering around the cut line last week at the Masters. He did make the cut, but it ends up with a tied 51st. Did you notice anything with his play last week that maybe gets you excited? Do you think there's anything going for him? I feel like he's been underperforming for a really long time.
He has been. Yeah. So the little that I saw of him, which was basically the end of his second round, because I was sweating the cut line and he was one of the guys who could move it.
Right.
He didn't play all that well. I mean, he would find himself in the middle of the fairway. He'd miss the green by, you know, 15 yards, which is like a huge miss. And you look at his results. He doesn't have a top 20 anywhere in the world since WGC Mexico. That was like February, I think. I mean, it was a long time ago. So it's been a while. It's been a lot of missed cuts. I think the game looks a little out of whack. I'm not all that interested.
I think you're right. And the reason I bring him up is because he was around the cut line. He got a lot of airtime on, I guess it was Saturday morning. So he was a guy that I think is going to be on the front of a lot of people's minds. And we think of him as a really talented player, and it looks like a steal for the price. So I think he's a good fade for the week too. One other guy that I'm really interested in, James Hahn.
Yes.
So James Hahn has a couple of great finishes to start this year, tied ninth at Safeway, tied sixth at Corrales, tied fifth at Shriners, and then tied 50th at the Houston Open. You didn't see the real blow up out of him. You didn't see the real high round, which with James Hahn in the past, that's been the worry. You're going to see some low ones. He can contend, and then all of a sudden he shoots 76.
Mm-hmm.
And with the 73 being the bad round in Houston, and he does make the cut, I think he's still really confident. I think he's still in really good form. So I'm looking at James Hahn, and I'm thinking this is going to be a good week for him.
I'm with you on Hahn. The lowest down I might go would potentially be David Hearn. David Hearn is 6,600. He's given us a couple of glimpses this season. 14th at Safeway. So that was the first week of the new year. 8th at Bermuda. So a couple of top 15 finishes. And if you look at what he's done here at the RSM Classic, so he's gone in his last four, 9th, 17th, 15th, 30th. If you gave me the average of those right now, so you gave me like a 22nd or whatever, I would take it and run at $6,600.
Yeah. Hey, I don't mind that at all. I don't mind it at all. A couple other guys you may want to take a look at. It feels like it could be a Ryan Armour course. Mm-hmm. I know the results don't really show it. There's not much to go on. Just feels like it could be. But $100 up from your David Hearn, Tyler McCumber. Any interest in him? He's a great driver of the ball. He's 64th tee to green so far this year. We've seen some good finishes and kind of got away from him a little bit. Do you think that's more the trend, the miscut at Shriners, miscut at Bermuda? Or do you think there's a chance you could see the second at Punta Cana and the tied six at the Sanderson? Do you think we could get that form back?
Yeah, I thought we were going to learn a lot over the last, and I think we're still in this stretch where I think we're going to learn a lot about him, right? Because it was a pretty slow start to his pro career, trying to figure everything out. He missed a lot of cuts. Then he had that second at Punta Cana you're talking about. And he backed it up with a six at Sanderson Farms. And I think we're still kind of in the if he misses the cut this week, maybe those were kind of fluky. But right. if he can figure out a way to, if he notches a top 20 here, I'd be like, okay, like he feels like he might be starting to turn the corner a little bit. So I think the jury is still very much out on him.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the thing I like about him is there seems like I don't want to call it win equity, right? But there's some equity there. There's a high ceiling. He's a guy who can go out there and contend and get close to 20 under and give you a chance to be on the first page of the leaderboard. So I may take a shot in the dark with Tyler McCumber and bet that he's going to, that those 2 weeks were not the fluke and the last 2 weeks were the fluke. I could take a chance on it. I don't feel great about it, but I may give it a look.
I think we are getting Harry Higgs back this week.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, right. Because he tested positive before Houston or Bermuda, one or the other, but it's been 3 weeks now since he's played. Okay. Second at Safeway, I think he's back in the field. So he's someone I would be keeping a close eye on as well.
He's a DFS darling. So I'm in on Harry Higgs too.
He's a PGA Tour darling, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. Popular figure.
Greg, thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. This was fun. I love getting right back after it, right? After yeah. the Masters exhale, you always bring your A game. So it was great to be with you.
Oh, thank you very much. Storylines, best bets, sleepers. That preview coming up tomorrow, live streaming on YouTube at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So, quote, be there or be square, says producer Jacob in the outline. And if he says it, I say it. Greg Ducharme, thank you very much. You can find Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can find me at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.